Hey guys, welcome to another Locked On Pacers podcast. I'm here with Adam again, and we're going to start today with a few administrative things before we actually get into your podcast. We made a nice spreadsheet full of a schedule so we can be a little more organized for you guys, and we're going to let you know that as these player season preview series roll out, we're going to be uploading more than one episode a week like we did last week. Going forward, we're going to do these Adam and Tony shows like we have been on the weekends that come out on Mondays, combined with pods during the week, just talking about all things that are going on with the team and with every player, and we'll have guests on that, whatever. And then we're also going to do these things called one-on-ones, which will be interviews with other basketball fans and Pacers aficionados who can come in and, you know, add more insight for you guys. So we're really excited about all those shows. We think they're going to be really good. And Adam has another bit of administrative things to tell you as well.
Yeah, so I don't know when Tony's going to put the song, whether before this open or after, but we're going to introduce a new song, a new intro song to Locked On Pacers podcast. My friend Louis Imperiali, shout out to Louis, a listener of this podcast, and his band, Fifth Lucky Dragon, have basically he's letting me use one of his songs called Glass Egos for our new intro. Before, I was using a free use thing I found online, so we'll switch to that, but we still won't be getting sued because I got permission to use it, which is great. And yeah, so I'm excited to be able to use this new song because, you know, good to mix up the music right before the season starts. I think it's a little better than our last one. Just, I mean, it was good, but, you know, could always be better. Just wanted to say I am excited for all this new content we're going to have. I wanted to just shout out to everybody listening to this podcast. I think we're now over almost 140,000 listens on this station. We got like almost 6,000 listens last week on our four podcasts. That's a big deal to us, you know. It might not seem like a lot to some people out there, but that's a big deal to us guys. A lot of people, you know, consistently listen to us. You know we have a solid base that just constantly wants to listen to our Pacers stuff. So that makes us really excited. It makes us want to work harder and put out great content. So, you know, I'm excited for what's going to come this season.
Yeah, we really appreciate that from you guys. And I'd like to add one more thing. I've seen a few tweets at me and at Adam recently just with, you know, comments and criticisms. And we really, really like those, you know. Either of us or at the actual podcast, if you just want to talk to us about the Pacers or if you have anything you want to say about the show, the is LockedOn_Pacers. Adam is at FriedmanAdam5 and I'm at TEastNBA. Again, feel free to tweet at us anytime with any criticisms to the real pod.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right. Welcome to the show, guys. We just got through our housekeeping stuff. And ironically, the Pacers had some housekeeping this week, Adam. They signed a new player.
Yeah. How do you pronounce his name?
It's Jared Utoff. You don't say the H in his last name. And his Jared is spelled J-A-R-R-O-D.
Okay, I got the Jared part. That I figured out. I just noticed his last name. I'm very bad with names. I don't want to be wrong with names because I know people. It's your name. It's a special. It's your name, so you don't want to mess it up. So I didn't want to make sure I didn't say it wrong.
So Utah comes in a partially guaranteed deal. It looks like it could be training camp and get waived. No one really knows what the partial guarantee is. But that is 20 players for the Pacers, which means they have officially filled out their entire training camp roster. And that also means that two roster spots, the competition is between Damian Wilkins, Ben Moore, Utoff, and the two Joneses. I think Utoff is the best of that group. He's 25. He played really well in the D-League, and he played okay for the Mavs in his NBA stint. And he's young, and I think he just checks all the boxes of a guy that the Pacers should want to have with one of those two training camp spots. But I'm not sure. I think it's a good signing, though, overall. I was pretty pleased when I saw that they actually did something productive with one of those. Thank you, Adam.
Yeah, I read your wonderful article on 8.9 seconds. I know when before the show you said it, you didn't thought it posted yet, but I read it this morning. I was looking up Utoff, right?
Yep.
Yes, Utoff, sorry. Utoff before the show, and I've been watching him since they signed him. I like him, the fact that he's young and that he seems like he has a decent three-point shot. You know, I don't know how much of an impact it's going to have on this team. None of those last roster guys are going to probably have a huge impact. But maybe he can win the spot over Damian Wilkins. That's kind of where this is leaning. The Pacers are leaning towards who's going to get kind of one of those last spots. You seem to think he has an edge over the Joneses and some of the other guys. And I'll take your word on that one because you are one of the better experts at bottom roster players on the Pacers. You seem to just know a ton about some of those lower level guys in the Pacers, which it's just hard. I mean, if you have to be really tuned in and all that stuff. But, you know, he has some Indiana ties with the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. So that's probably why they brought him in. He, you know, had a pretty good year last year with them. But, like, my only thought is how – like, I just don't know how to translate G League or D League, was called last year, play to the NBA. Because I've – you know, we've seen guys like George Nang had, like, huge D League seasons, and but it didn't translate to the league. Ricky Christmas was, like, a 26-10 guy in the D League, and he was nothing in the NBA. So, like, I just don't know how it translates.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that they're just better than other D-League players, because if you're not better than D-League players, you're not going to do well in the NBA. So you look at the two Joneses, Daquan and Trey McKinney. Trey McKinney Jones with the Mad Ants was, like so dominant. And, you know, he kind of showed he could score, but that's really it. He didn't show he could dominate an NBA game in any other way. And Daquan is kind of the same way. He had an NBA stint with the Magic, but he was never really dominant in the D-League. I mean, he's really a veteran, but he has had some dominant stints in the G League. He was an all-star in the G League, I think, in 2015. I can't remember exactly. And Utah also, you know, he was 17 points and 9 rebounds in, like, 30 minutes a game, and he shot 50% from three when he was on the Mad Ants. I mean, that is crazy. So, to me, I think he – and, sorry, I should go on this tangent now. I think shooting is a skill that from the G to the NBA translates the most, just because it's the same skill, like – besides the fact that the defenders are more athletic and get onto you more and quicker, it's still the same length of shot. So, you know, shooting translates really well. He shot okay with the Mavericks and the pros. He was 3 of 9. Not big enough sample to really stay, but I think it translates well, and I think he's definitely the best of those players. And like you said, I think, you know, he's young and efficient enough, and he's just better than the Joneses, so he's an edge over them. And his Pacers ties give him the edge over Ben Moore and Wilkins. So I really think he's going to make the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking back. The last kind of D-League player I thought, right, Jordan Clarkson's the last sort of D-League player who even made it in the league. So Whiteside, that's right.
As well.
I just remember Clarkson.
That's all I can think of.
I just remember Clarkson specifically just when he signed. But, those two guys are the only two guys I've really seen that can translate from the D-League to the professional game. But – you never know, right? I mean, there's always a chance. I mean, I just pulled up the MVPs from the D-League, and the Pacers had a guy on their roster named Ron Howard. I don't even know who that is. He was the MVP of the D-League, played for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, but clearly, you know, I think he is currently in Europe playing basketball. Well, so
you can also look at, like, Yogi Ferrell and Jonathan Simmons from last year, who were, like, good D-League players who came in the NBA, and, like, unlike Clarkson and Whiteside, they were okay rotation players, but if that's what Utah is, that's what the Pacers need. So maybe that can happen.
Yeah, but, you know, I hate to put Yogi in there because Yogi is a D-League player in a sense. Like, if Yogi was 6'1", he would have been a first-round pick. And he would have been a first-round pick his freshman year probably. But it's because he was 5'10", he wasn't that. So Yogi, you know, I know as IU – as an IU fan yourself, and a former IU fan and myself, I used to be an IU fan. You know, we have a bigger affinity and a bigger, you know, we like Yogi more than the average fan. But, like, I always thought Yogi was an NBA player, just his height was holding him back. So I wasn't surprised when he had a big game with the Mavericks and got that guaranteed contract, because, like, I knew he could be that player if it just somebody gave him a chance.
Yeah, we are kind of biased in our Yogi Ferrell analysis. But Jonathan Simmons, too, like, he paid to have a tryout, right? Like, everyone's heard that story by now. Like, sometimes those G League guys really do come in and make an impact, and I think Utah's got the skills to do that. And I just think he's better than all the – I mean, it's my personal opinion, of course, but I just think he's better than the other four guys. Could give him one of the last two spots, but who knows?
Yeah, you know, he's young. He has a good-looking three-point shot, so hopefully he can that can translate somewhat to the league. You know, if you're a good three-point shooter, you can succeed in the NBA. That's proven by almost every player on the rosters of all these teams. I mean, like, you know, a lot of those bench guys are just good at one thing. So if he can be good at shooting three, he'll make the team and he'll have maybe an impact.
Yeah. The only downside I would say is that he's like a 4-3 guy. And a lot of those garbage time guys the Pacers have are also guys who play the 4 and the 3. So maybe it'll be tough for him to get any minutes, but, you know, he's good injury insurance and he's just worth having to me over the other guys. So he can make the team, but we'll see. I am mostly glad they constructively used their last roster spot.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, it's good they finally used it.
It was good. And now we head into training camp, and Now we're going to turn to something you wrote from something I wrote. For those of you that did not read it on Indie Cornrows, Adam posted an article about how Darren Collison, or about Darren Collison and his fit with the team as they bridge from era to era. I'll let you take the lead here. Talk about it.
Yeah, so I decided I wanted to just – I went to the Pacers roster, decided I want to write about one of the players, and Darren Collison was kind of the one player who I felt has been under-talked about but is kind of a good fit for this Pacer team in a sense. I mean, so I talked about this on a Pacer player preview coming up with actually one of your fellow co-workers, 8.5 seconds, Hunter Cuffell, about Collison being kind of a good mentor and stuff like that. You know, you have to mention the domestic violence stuff. I didn't mention it in my article because I wasn't sure how to touch it. You know, I'm not very good at that kind of stuff. I'm not an expert, and I don't really know how to bridge a topic in a way that doesn't anger people. But, you know, in general, I thought Collison is sort of that scrappy, young kind of point guard who was young, short kind of point guard who's proven, you know, he's gone from being a starter to not a starter to earning a starting spot again. He's been all over the league. He played 4 years of college. Like, he just seems like a kind of perfect kind of fit to have on a team that's super young. And then hopefully he can be the kind of guy that mentors the next point guard that Pacers take, because the way the roster is constructed right now, you assume they're set at center because Miles Turner, they probably set at small forward with Glenn Robinson. They're probably set at shooting guard with Victor Oladipo. And then the power forward position, they're either going to have Young or they're going to have Leaf or they're going to have Sabonis. They have lots of young players there. So point guard is the only position where they're not set for the future, kind of, or feeling like they're going to have a future position player. And they really need a franchise point guard because they really haven't had one since maybe Mark Jackson.
Yeah, and I really thought it was interesting when you had that point about how at UCLA he played with and kind of mentored like a ton of guys who went on to the NBA. Jordan Farmar, Aaron Aflalo, Jrue Holiday, and Russell Westbrook were all there at the same time as him. And then when I looked at his NBA tenure, Kings, he was above like Rondo and Isaiah Thomas. And, you know, he just seems to always have that mentor mentality. And he's a steady player, he shoots well, and he's not necessarily a caretaker, but he's not really bad at anything besides defense. Like, that's a great mentor to have for any young player on the team.
Yeah, he's been so adjacent, like, that you think there's got to be something about him to so many really good point guards. In college, it was Russell Westbrook, and it was, like I said, it was Jrue Holiday, and it was Jordan Farmar and Aaron Aflalo. Then in the NBA, like you said, it was Isaiah Thomas he was next to. I mean, he was next to Chris Paul at one point. I think he wasn't there when Rivers was there, but he's just been near so many good point guards that you think some of it has rubbed off on him in some sense. You know, he understands how to be successful in this league, and especially because he is probably one of the shorter players in the league. You know, it's NBA as a point guard, it's become such a, you have to be 6'3 or taller to be good at it. And he's like maybe 6 foot, you know, he claims to be 6'1. I think, I don't know if he's 6'1. I never stood next to him. You know, I've stood next to a guy like Yogi Ferrell to earlier. I know Yogi Ferrell is not 6 feet because I've stood next to him before, but I've never stood next to a guy like Collison, but I don't know if he's 6 feet. He doesn't look 6 feet on the court. So the fact that he is such a small player and has succeeded so well in the league that he's probably, you know, he's become a 40% three-point shooter. That's really respectable in this league. And he's probably earned himself, you know, 8 more years in this league, just the way he's turned himself into that kind of player in the past few years. So, you know, I hope the Pacers can bring in a young point guard next draft. I'm looking at Colin Sexton. That's the guy that's number one right now on point guards. And if they bring Colin Sexton, maybe he can learn off Collison, which would be really good for the Pacers because they really could use, you know, to be successful in the NBA, you need a good point guard because every good team in the NBA right now basically has a point guard except for the Cavs, and the Cavs don't count because LeBron is a point guard at the same time as being a
exactly. And you know, I do like some things when I look through Collison's stat line, and he's a 42% shooter from deep. He's never averaged less than 10 points a game a single time in a season. His assists always hover around 5 a game, and given how good he is at shooting, maybe it's fine that he's not passing. So that's, I like a lot. And he's a really good free throw shooter too. I almost skipped over that, sorry. Which means, you know, you can't foul him either. I mean, he's got a lot of good things about him, and those are the kind of things you'd want him to teach guys. Even if, you know, maybe we don't have sex until next year and we're wasting his mentorship. Well, that's not really true because we have Joe Young and Corey Joseph, who are both young too, and he could teach them a thing or two about, you know, being in the NBA, and they could come back to the team and take that mentorship moving on in the future.
Yeah, and there's a point you always made that I remember you made last week was like, well, young point guards stink their first year anyways in the league. So it doesn't really matter even if he's here one more year with Sexton here, because Sexton's not going to be a good point guard his first season. None of them are. So you said, I think your quote was, only Chris Paul is a good young point guard. So, you know, him coming for extra years doesn't hurt the Pacers. And then when you talk about Joe Young, I mean, Yeah, I put that Joe Young line that maybe I'll mentor Joe Young. And then I got probably 10 to 15 comments saying Joe Young is not the future on the article. So, you know, there's not a lot of respect for Joe Young out there. Maybe Joe Young surprises everybody, but, you know, he might be what he is.
You know, never mind. I was about to say, I think maybe I could score a point playing one-on-one with Joe Young. I couldn't. He's an NBA player, but no, still, he's just not a very good defender, and Collison is not a very good defender either, so I don't think he can teach him there. But Joe Young does have some offensive potential, so maybe maybe Collison can teach him something there. And I really like this article. You guys should read it if you haven't yet. It was really good. You know, I agree with you that the point guard position is in flux, especially with none of the three guys you'd consider point guards on the team having a guaranteed contract for next year, which really scares me.
Yeah, I also have – so I opened the article by basically saying Collison was like the definition of an average point guard. But then I go my next line. I think it's about how Pacers haven't had a franchise point guard since Mark Jackson. So I know you're a big George Hill fan. Do you want to try to defend George Hill as being kind of a franchise point guard, or no?
I think that the Pacers and NBA have seen, now that George Hill has succeeded on other teams, that his defensive talents are not just a result of being on a good defensive team in Indiana, and that he's just a super good defender. And I loved George Hill. You nailed the point that his skills are more like shooting guard skills, but he's still a good ball handler, and he's short enough that I would consider him a point guard. And he's a good shooter and creator and a defender, and that's skills for point guards is defense and shot creation, and he's pretty good at both of those. Is he a franchise point guard? Not really, but I think he was the best since Jackson. I think he's better than Collison too.
Okay. No, I agree he's better than Collison, but I always thought George Hill was better off being a shooting guard. It's where he played in San Antonio next to Tony Parker sometimes. So I just wanted to see, because I
understand it, because he does have shooting guard skills for sure. Like, his off ball is good too. He's just not bad at anything, I guess. And I really like, he's a caretaker and he's not bad at anything. And I like that. So,
yeah. And I don't want to like just hate on, don't want it to be represented as hating on George Hill, because I think George Hill was a good fit for the Pacers in a sense. I mean, people he's going to get a bad rap with the Pacers because of the Kawhi Leonard trade always. I mean, it's stinks the way that is, but he's a hometown kid. He from, you know, Broderpool High School. So, I have respect for George Hill. I don't want it to come off like I didn't have respect for George Hill in that article. That's all I was trying to make.
No, I understand, but that was the question. You let it ride. I would have picked George Hill as my best since Jackson. I mean, what are your other options, like Jamal Tinsley?
Yeah, you couldn't. The one thing about Tinsley, though, is that because the way NBA is such an offensive game, his stats just look terrible because the Pacers were like a 70-point-a-game team when he was at their best with them, which – that's what they wanted. They wanted to play to 70 points, but it's just so odd looking at some of those stats from 10 years ago, just because of the way the Pacers were just such a different team.
You're right. Honorable mention for point guards of TJ Ford, because I loved him when he was so short.
Yeah. Honorable mention, maybe.
He wasn't good. He was just short and exciting. But yeah, you guys should check out Adam's article. It's really good. I agree. There has not been enough content about Darren Collison. I think he could really help the team. When I had Will Furr on to talk about Thaddeus Young, Joseph starting at some point in the year. Maybe, but I like Collison a lot, and I think he'll start the whole year. And I think he'll fit the team really well.
Yeah.
So you guys really check out his article. It's really nice.
Yeah, I also think part of it, I mean, like I said, the domestic violence thing, I didn't want to go over that. I think that might be part of it. He didn't get as much coverage he's gotten, because I think he's hard to write about in a sense, because you don't want to praise him too much because of the backlash you might get, and because it's a tough, you know, dynamic to walk in the line, especially with the way the NFL has had the issues with it. It's a tough topic to breach around and write around in some sense.
It is. And that's kind of why he got shooed out of town when he went to Dallas the first time out of Indiana. So that's tough. And, you know, that Dallas team had a ton of point guards, but he needed to go. So,
yeah,
it's tough to talk about that. And I mean, we'll just, he's gained some character in his travel time around the NBA since he was last year.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he'll I think he'll have a good season. You know, like I said, you should listen to my Pacer player preview with Hunter Cuffell. It was really good. So that's gonna come out. We created a schedule like Tony said in the beginning, so it's gonna come out I believe this Tuesday. It's gonna come out on Tuesday. So
yeah.
Tune into one of those Pacer player previews. That's one of Tony's designs. Tony's idea was the Pacer player preview. It was a great idea. So I think we're going to do one now, right?
We are. After you hear this ad from SeatGeek, you will be hearing about Victor Oladipo. Hi, everyone. We're going to take a short break before talking about our season preview for Victor Oladipo so I can tell you about the great SeatGeek. As we preach every podcast, you guys have got to try SeatGeek if you haven't yet. It's literally the best way to buy tickets to a game that I've ever used. I've used StubHub before, and it just doesn't do it for me anymore. There's always those hidden fees and all that junk, and you don't really know how good your value is. But SeatGeek alleviates all those problems by ranking your tickets on their value. You can easily just go and buy the best value ticket to the game so you know you're getting the best value possible. It's really great. And if you use the code LONBA at checkout, you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So you can use SeatGeek on your laptop, your phone, your tablet, anything. I'd highly recommend you use SeatGeek if you're going to be buying tickets to an event anytime soon. All right, and we're back to do our season player preview series. We're going to roll it right on and talk about Victor Oladipo. And I think we have to open with Oladipo. I'm going to say this. I have a very big soft spot for him for two reasons. One, he went to IU. And two, I think he has so much pressure on him from this Paul George trade, and it's so unfair to him that he has all this pressure. So it's going to be such a telling season for him to see how he handles it and how he performs.
I agree with you. I do also have a soft spot for Oladipo, not as much as you, because I have renounced my IU fandom once I went to Syracuse. But still, I do have a soft spot for him, but he is under immense pressure because he has to be the player he was in Orlando, at least somewhat close to that. Otherwise, he is going to get ridiculed and run out of town because he's making so much money.
Yeah, it's scary. But we got to give some background about Oladipo before we can talk about what we project for him. Drafted in 2013 with the number 2 pick to the Magic. Went to Indiana, obviously, as we've already talked about. Career, his average is 15.9 points a game, 4 rebounds a game, and 3.7 assists. So basically, he just looks like a scorer on paper, and that's a pretty good way to describe him. Nothing really jumps off the page when you look at him, besides that 16 points a game as a 24-year-old. It's pretty impressive. Adam, what do you think of Depot's career so far?
It's an up and down career, right? I mean, so I wouldn't say he had any down. So it's been sort of, it was on a rise, a projection, and then it sort of hit a flat and maybe decreased a little bit when he got traded to Oklahoma City because he was playing next to the most ball dominant player of his generation in Russell Westbrook.
You heard my name for it. It's Martyr Ball. It was Martyr Ball.
That's right. That's for Martyr Ball. But like, if Oladipo continues on the path he was on in Orlando, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to keep getting better. He's still very young, so he can still definitely improve and get better. And if he continues on that path, he could become a 20-point game guy. And yes, he might not be as good as Paul George is, but if he is close to that, you know, they got another player, maybe Sabonis or something, it makes it look better because he's going to be compared to Paul George basically the rest of his career unless he becomes better than him.
Yeah, that's really unfair to him, but – you know, I think he can live up to it if he can really keep his scoring going. And like you said, that growth as he went forward. I think it's important to note when we're talking about with the Magic, his usage was hovering around like 23, 24, and it was only 21 with the Thunder. He just did not have the ball as much. His scoring averages went up with the Magic in his first 3 years. And just in general, he was just improving as a ball handler and player before his Oklahoma City playing in a weird role. Really hard to say how much that season really is a good way to judge him as a player. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that is. I think you have to throw out that season.
Yeah, his assist percentage was averaging probably close to 20 in his time with the Magic, and then with the Thunder it was 12.5. Like he just didn't have the ball enough to want to pass, and I totally understand that. His steals percentage dropped, his blocks percentage dropped, his usage dropped, his rebounding dropped. It all went down, and that's both a testament to his decline in minutes and his just like less impact on the court he had on that Russell Westbrook led team. But we shouldn't talk about his under season. We should talk about what we think he's going to do with the Pacers because he's on the Pacers now, and he's going to have a new role with the team, and I think that's very important.
Yeah, he is going to be the most he's going to be this one of the centerpieces of the offense. Let's put it that way. He's going to be. Like he's not going to have to be in a secondary role of sitting behind waiting for Westbrook to make something happen for him to get the ball. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. He's going to have to make a lot of plays by himself. It's going to be the tension of the defense a ton, but that's good and bad because it gives him a chance to prove that maybe he is one of the better 30 players in the league or 30 to 50 players in the league, or he won't live up to it.
Yeah, I've notoriously always said him and Miles Turner are options one and two, but I think I should stop doing that, and I'm going to start calling them options 1A and 1B on offense, because I think they're both going to be the first option, honestly. They're just going to run a lot of plays that end up with one of them getting a shot somehow, and I think a lot of what Depot's going to do is, because Bojan's going to be on the left wing a lot because he's, you know, so right-hand dominant, you'll see a lot of Depot, you know, on the left or the right wing, or, you know, kind of on the top of the key initiating offense and creating off the dribble, which when we talk about his strengths and weaknesses in like 20 seconds, I'll talk about that. He's a good creator off the dribble and scorer, but it'll be very interesting to see how he operates, you know, with in such a set role, because I think it'll be very clear that, you know, he's on the same couple sides of the court, you know, every time down the court, and they're looking to get him the ball and run through Thad, or through Thad, wow, through Miles Turner, which will be very interesting. But some big strengths for Oladipo, for me at least, just general scoring, you know, 16-plus points a game when you're, you know, under 25 years old is awesome. A lot of people will say he's inefficient. That's fine. You can say he's inefficient, but, you know, getting up volume shots is still hard to do, because if anyone could score 16 points a game on volume shots every night, they would, but they can't because it's a hard thing to do. So I think that's a good testament to Oladipo's scoring ability. Like I said earlier, a lot of stuff went down when he was in Oklahoma City, but something else that went down is his turnover rate went down quite a bit. Only 10% turnovers when he had the ball in his hand. I'm a big fan of that. I like people who take care of the ball. Adam, you got anything else you want to include here?
You mentioned, like, earlier that him and Turner are 1A and 1B, and I think that's the best way to put it, but they're going to be playing through each other the entire game. So that's a perfect way to put it, is 1A and 1B, because, you know, I imagine we're going to see a ton of pick and roll with him and Turner. I hope we do. You know, that means that they're doing something right if they're doing that. And just touching on some of his weaknesses, you know, he had a kind of a, like I was talking about earlier, he had that peak 18-point year, which was really great. And then he had some injuries and stuff like that. And then he went to Oklahoma City and things kind of changed for him. So, you know, I want to throw out the Oklahoma City season when you're talking about him. So I don't, you know, you talk about his turnover rate dropping, but I want to throw out everything that happened that season because he had the ball so little in his hands. Then I worry about it. And I think you hit it perfectly that it's one of his weaknesses is definitely his turnover ability, because if he didn't turn over the ball, he might actually be just a point guard in this league, because he's 6'4", so he could be a point guard if he was like a really good ball handler, which if he becomes a really good ball handler, we could see him as being in a more point guard heavy role, but as like a scoring point guard, like a Harden type point guard, not necessarily like a Collison type point guard.
I totally agree with that. You know, his ball handling ability is already pretty good. You know, that's why I'm okay with him having the ball in the right wing, because his left-handed dribble is just fine. He's, you know, good getting the hole and creating for others. His assists, ironic, or, you know, this is a good testament to what you just said, actually. His assists when he was with the Magic were about 4 per game every season he was there, and then with the Thunder it was at 2.5. So, you know, on that team where he didn't get as many opportunities, you can't really say he was passing a lot. But with the Magic, he showed, you know, he can give you 4 assists tonight and get the ball to his teammates, which I think is encouraging, given that the Pacers starting lineup kind of has a good variety of people who can score the ball in various ways.
Yeah, and he's gotten better at three-point shooting each year. I know he went from 33 his first year to 35 by his last year in Orlando and 36 last year. So if he keeps going that trajectory and hits 38 this year, that's even better, because a guy like him who can shoot 38% from three opens up the entire game for him, because then he can drive to the rim at ability because players are defending him close to the rim. Because he's really quick, so he's good at getting – he can get to the rim if he has enough – if the defender's playing tight enough on him and he can get around him. So I like that. There are a lot of signs that point towards he's going to have a good season, because he was on a projection. And then, you know, when he had the ball, he was okay. And I just think, you know, the end line of points didn't look good, but everything else in that line of looks pretty good. His shooting percentage went up, his 3-point shooting percentage went up, his free throws are about the same, but that's fine. It's about 75-80%, but just all the underlying stats look better than they were in Orlando. So there's some signs there that he's going to be good.
Well, and you hit 3-point percentage, and I'll also add 3-point attempt rate. His 3-point attempt rate was almost 30% when he was with the Magic, and was almost 40% when he was with the Thunder. And even if he's just shooting like 35%, the fact that he's going to just be gunning him means you have to guard him out there. And that alone, you know, spaces the floor and adds value, which is super important. And I'm a big fan of him, you know, being able to get him up so well. I just scrolled down into his shooting percentage area of B-ball ref. He shot over 60% at the rim last year, which for a guard is spectacular. And I think he'll have the space to do that again this year, which is awesome. He only took 25% of his shots at the rim. You'd like to see that go up. One of his seasons with the Magic, he was at 42%. I would hope that he can have it, you know, in the 30s if he's going to shoot that well at the rim especially. So hopefully the the spacing can really help him out with finishing at the rim, because that appears to be something he's pretty good at.
Yeah, I think it will, because I think his role in Oklahoma City was sit in the corner, shoot a three, forget the ball. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was to help Westbrook get assists. That was kind of his job in Oklahoma City. That's what every player in that or his job last year was, to help Westbrook get his 10 assists a game. So I think he'll get to the rim more. You know, it'll be harder for him to get to the rim because he'll be the one of the main focuses on the defense. But the Pacers are going to be able to spread it out with Turner. So hopefully if they're able to spread the floor out, he won't be as clogged in the lanes when he goes down there, because there won't be a bigger guy. Because even with the Thunder, Steven Adams, you know, I know teams had to guard Westbrook, but Steven Adams is a bigger guy, so he wasn't always shooting at threes and wasn't respected outside the 3-point line. So the center could just kind of cheat in a little bit. You know, hopefully with the Pacers, the center position isn't going to be able to cheat towards the rim, because Turner's going to be so much of a threat on the outside.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, that is definitely the biggest strength of that Pacers starting lineup, is like Thad Young pre-wrist injury was like a 40% 3-point shooter, and Miles Turner's like a 35%, and Bojan's like 38%, and Collison, we just talked about, is like 42%. Like, those are all great 3-point shooters, and Depot's going to have, you know, all the room he wants to, you know, dribble against the rim, create for guys in the corners. And this is I know we said we don't want to put this pressure on him with the Paul George comparisons, but you know, that's something that Paul George was really good at, is when he would get a screen and the defense would collapse on him, you know, either at the top of the key or on the basket, he was really good at kicking it out to the corners or getting someone an open shot on the wing. And if Oladipo can have that kind of passing in that exact situation, that would be just absolutely massive for the offense.
You brought up a problem I hated with Paul George, but I don't want to get into it, so I'm not going to touch that Paul George statement, even though I have so much stuff I could say about it. No, but you're right about the collapsing thing, you know, hitting that extra pass. Paul George was very good at that, hitting that pass and people collapsed on him. You know, with Oladipo, the way we've been talking about now, I'm kind of talking myself into him having a good season. Just looking at his stats, like, you know, in the way we're talking about him, I'm talking myself slowly into, hey, he's going to put up 18 points a game this season, which is really good. If he puts up 18 points a game this season, that's like what you want. But I'm sort of talking myself into that as we go through this right now, because I'm kind of feeling a little more positive about his outlook in the season versus kind of going into this. I was thinking, oh, he might have I don't know how great he is, but, you know, some of his underlying stats are, you know, percentage-wise look pretty good.
Right, and we haven't really hit – I kind of said this, but we haven't really hit it yet – is his free throw percentage also is 80%, and that's super good. I mean, that's – if you foul him, that's technically like a 1.6 points per possession, which is like almost impossible to match efficiency-wise shooting from any other distance on the court. Like 60% at the rim is amazing for guards, and that's only 1.2 points per possession. Like, he's going to get space to shoot just because guys don't want to foul him and send him to the line. That is game that – you know, are just like pretty good, you know, and if you can put them all together and make one of his skills really good, and, you know, just he'd be awesome, because he's not really bad at anything, because we haven't even touched on his defense yet, but his defense is actually pretty good.
Yeah, so I actually have a question for you before we get into his defense. So now that the East is basically out of every major player except for Kyrie, LeBron, and Gordon Hayward, is Oladipo maybe an all-star?
Well, the fan voting is all per game stat, people, so maybe.
He might not get that one. Well, he might not get that one, but is he, you know what I mean? Is he one of the best 12, 15 players in the East?
I think he's no. No, okay, is my answer. I think he could get close if he has the jump that I expect him to. You know, we'll get to what I project his stats to be later. Then I think he get kind of close. Like, I think he'll be in. Show like the list of votes and where people are. I think he might be on the list, but I don't think he'll make it.
Fair enough. I just wondered that, because I was just thinking about, if he actually puts up 20 points a game, that might be all-star level in the East for sure.
Oh, yeah. And we've had a lot of – there's a lot of reasons to think that that's totally doable. I mean, he had 18 a game when he was a 22-year-old. Like, he could totally do that. And looking at that season, that 2014-15 season, is kind of what I would like to use as my baseline for what I expect him to do this year, just because he played so many minutes per game on that Orlando team. And I think he's going to play a ton of minutes on this Pacers team, because – play at the three as well, and who knows how much Lance is going to play behind him, and there's no other two guards besides those two guys, so he's just going to be playing all the time.
Yeah, and I want to take that season as the one too, just because his next season he was actually going to hurt a bunch in his 2015.
Yeah, he only started 52 games that year. I thought that was weird.
And I thought that was weird too, so I went to look it up, and you just see in the 2015 he had a sore Achilles, concussion, and then he had I think that 2016 was a knee sprain, but you know, yeah, 2016 of that season, he had a knee sprain. I mean, he had just a couple injuries throughout that season that was just like probably kind of contributed to his down numbers. Then he gets traded, and then his numbers drop off because he got traded. Because realistically, his numbers actually didn't drop off. His just per points dropped off. everything else actually got better. So that's why I'm kind of being talked into. If he could get back to the 18 points a game, because his 3-point shooting is better, his free throw shooting is just as good, and his field goal shooting is better.
Yeah, and the extra space will really help a lot, because you already touched on the Steven Adams thing, but like, if you're going to talk about a terrible spacing team, the Orlando Magic have to be one of the top teams on your list. So, I mean, that's really tough for him. You know, I think he'll be happy with all the room he has to work, especially because in college he had Cody Zeller as a center, who also is. So now he can finally roll into his defense. He's had a positive defensive box plus minus seasons, and he's never been below -1, which is, you know, that's just fine. And his defensive rating career is 107, which would have been the third best on the team last year. So, you know, I like all those things. He's pretty long for his height. You know, he's just kind of a shooting guard. I mean, he's 6'4", so I'm not saying he's like big, but he looks bigger than 6'4" just because of his long wingspan, and he's a pretty good defender. He's quick enough to stand in front of guys.
Yeah, that was a staple of him at IU, I remember. Just his defense was really good. That's what actually kind of helped propel that IU team that he played on to such a good season. And they lost in Sweet 16 to my Syracuse Orange, but no, that's what helped. That's what I wasn't even a Syracuse fan. I was an IU fan back then, but I had to say that. But that's what propelled them. And, you know, I always thought watching him when he was younger that he was going to be like, you know, worst case scenario, he's a pretty good defender in the league and he can score, you know, decent points, but make his name in the league as a defender. So, you know, I don't know if it translated a ton in the league. You know, like you said, he has a pretty decent rating. He has a 6'9 wingspan. I looked it up. I mean, that's pretty good for a guy 6'4". I mean, that's what Rondo kind of had. Rondo was 6'1", 6'2", and had like a 6'9 wingspan. Rondo was a really good defender at his peak. So I think he can be a decent defender. And, you know, he's going to have to help out on whoever the best guard. He's going to be guarding maybe the best guard, because I'm not sure Collison can guard some of the best punkers in the league, which might actually hurt his offense because he has to guard the best player on the court. But he's going to be guarding, I guess in the East, he's only going to be guarding Kyrie and Isaiah Thomas, but in general, he'll be guarding all the best point guards in the league.
I think he might be the best individual guard defender on the whole team. Maybe Lance, depending on what kind of Lance we get. That's impossible to say. Also noteworthy that he averages 1.5 steals per game to his career. That's pretty great. And, you know, you don't think of him as a guy who makes a ton of – I think those steals are actual steals and not just a byproduct of chance. So that's really encouraging to see as well. I remember at IU, he didn't take a bunch of gambles. I'm sorry, I just burped, so I had to pause for a bit. But he didn't take a lot of gambles, but he's just a solid guy. He's going to stand in front of guys. And you said, you know, you put him on the guard. I think you put him on a guard too, but you can even put him on a wing if you need to, because Bo's going to need the help. Or depending on what lineup he's in, if he's in a three, he could guard a wing. So, you know, there's a lot of signs that point to him being a quality defender for the team.
Yeah, you hit Lance too. I think there's an interesting lineup out there where it could be Lance and him on the court without a point guard, because that might be their best defensive chance. Because if him and Lance, Lance and him might be the two best individual defenders on as guards, at least, you know, be able to guard. You know, this league, NBA is such a guard heavy league now. There are such good point guards in the league. Night in, night out, you have to go up against one of the, you know, every night it's a really good point guard on most teams. So maybe, you know, as the season goes along, if the Pacers, you know, start to succeed, I could see an opportunity where Collison gets transitioned out. Or, you know, like you said, you play him at small forward and he just does, you know, he can guard some forwards in this league at times.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate way to put it. And you just talked about how you could play with Lance because of that defensive stuff. I kind of wanted to talk about what players I think he'll fit the best with on the team. Lance was on my list in my notes that I did not send you that part. But I think he'll gel well with Lance just because they're the best two defensive wing guys on the team, and they can both kind of create off the dribble better than most other guards on the team outside of Collison. Obviously, Miles Turner, because they're going to be 1A and 1B on offense. They're going to be awesome together, just with that screen roll, screen pop, whatever you want to say. And oddly enough, Thaddeus Young and him, I think, are going to be the best duo on the team in terms of net rating when the season comes to shove, just because both of them are kind of like high-floor guys who are both good at everything. Not great at anything, but not bad at anything either. And I think that they're just going to do well together and form a good chemistry because of that.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there with Turner and Stevenson. I think I talked a little bit already about their mesh. I'm going to hit the Young point. Yeah, I think that makes sense about him. Young and him are just such – Young has made his way in the league as being just the guy that just does all the little things right. You know, he's not an exceptional offensive talent, not an exceptional defensive talent, but he does every little thing right and does enough to help a team out. And I think Oladipo fits some of that same mold. And as we keep talking about Oladipo and Thad Young, now I'm thinking maybe Young won't get traded because They could be so good together. This team might actually be decent. I'm getting talked into this team winning 35 games to 40 games now. I'm getting there. You know, right as soon as it starts.
A player I think he'll be bad with is Bojan. I know that their offensive fit at least makes sense in that when Oladipo creates off the dribble, you can set him up for a three either in the corner or on the wing, but Bojan's bad defense is not going to help Oladipo. You don't want Oladipo using a ton of effort on that end of the floor because he's going to be one of the best scorers on the team. And so Bojan's bad D is not going to help him very much there. I can only see him having a bad fit with, though, which is encouraging.
Yeah, and this team should be worried about defense, right? Don't worry about the defense. This team is going to score a lot of points. That's what it seemed like to me. I mean, offensively, this team is actually pretty well designed with Oladipo. And the, you know, he fits. You know, they basically how they started, they had Turner and they built around Turner, but then they fit, you know, they fit guys that also fit around when they traded for Oladipo. You know, they found, you know, some guys that fit around those two guys in Collison and Bogdanovich. So, you know, I actually like the construction of this team. I'm worried about how the once the coaches get a hold of it, what they decide to run, because I'm not going to trust Nate McMillan with anything. But, you know, I do like, I mean, I think you said he might struggle with Bogdanovich, but Bogdanovich at least fits the idea of he's just stick Bogdanovich in the corner. It spreads the floor to Oladipo to do what he wants to do. So it might not be a 100% perfect fit, but it's the best fit they could find in free agency.
I agree. I'm 100% with you. I think we fit every facet of his game that I would like to talk about. I want you to take a stab at what you think his projected stats will be this season.
All right. So I kind of teased it earlier, and I think he hits 18 points a game. So let's say 18 points. Let's say he hits maybe even four to five assists. He's going to be up there in assists just because hopefully he'll be playing a pick and roll game with Miles Turner a ton. And then, you know, rebounds wise, we talked about how this team has lack of rebounding. So he might be able to get in there and get some rebounds just because if you learn anything from Westbrook, it's the idea that if he gets a rebound, he can push the offense up. And that was a big Russell Westbrook thing was, you know, we talked about Westbrook getting ball hog rebounds, but also when Westbrook got the ball on the rebounds, he just pushed it and that helped everything. So maybe that's what he does. Maybe he gets some rebounds and just pushes it up really fast. So let's say 18-4-4.
Okay, I like that. I'd like to say, first I'll say minutes. I hope he plays 33 to 35 minutes a night. I mean, you think you kind of have to have that if you're trying to win just because he's one of the, you know, more consistent players on both ends. I liked your 18 points. I was completely going to say that before you even said that, so that makes me feel like happier. But thankfully, I also would have said 18 points. My assist number is going to be a little lower than yours. I'm actually only going to go with 3 just because I think – some of the guys are going to struggle to score, and you know maybe his creation can lead to more assists than I've seen in the past. But I'm just skeptical of how well his creation will be. I think Collison will do a little bit of creating too, and Turner will. And there's just so many decent passers in the starting lineup that you know may not be just him in that creation system. And rebounds, I'm going to go the other direction of you and go 5 because we need someone to rebound the ball. You said that someone's going to have to get the rebound and push, and with this team being so bad on defense, there might not be enough rebounds even that happen because teams will just score on them for him to get 5 a night, get him when the shots don't go in, and I think he can get up to 5.
Yeah, see, you talk about that fire, and the problem with every player I proved it, we said, oh, they might get more rebounds because there's going to be more rebound opportunities because they're not a good rebounding team, but like then you get in this weird area where if every player gets more rebounds, then nobody gets more rebounds because then everybody's taking the rebounds, so... You know, I'm just skeptical of the high rebound numbers of any of the Pacer players just because, like you said, if they lay up a lot of points, it's not going to matter because they're not going to get many rebounds anyways.
Rebounds to get. Which, you know, that would be concerning, but we'll see. I think we're pretty close, which is good. Defensively, I talked about this with Wilfer, and I'm kind of agreeing with his theory, but I'll still give it the shout. I think defensive stats are sometimes – I think steals are less so with guards and blocks are less so with centers, but it's still a thing. But I think, you know, he'll get about 1.5 steals and maybe half a block, maybe not. He's not a blocker at all just because he's 6'4 and he doesn't really get in the post that much. You think that's about right?
Yeah, I don't think he even averages close to a block a game. I mean, but I think a steal or two. Yeah, no, he's got long arms. He'll be able to – I mean, I don't know how much he's going to do swiping at players, but he can do it a little bit. He can try to swipe at some players. So I definitely see an ability to get 1 or 2 steals a game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've liked this encouraging trend that I've seen where his turnovers per game has gone down most years and his fouls per game has gone down every year. And, you know, I'd like to see his turnovers be less than his fouls, just, you know, doing all the little things right, making sure the Pacers have the ball, doing well with it, getting those rebounds, creating those shots, scoring those points. I mean, I'm kind of nervous for his pressure, but this podcast has made me really excited about Oladipo. So weirdly.
Yeah, no, I'm weirdly excited about this season. Well, first of all, I'm excited for any NBA season because I'm bored and I love the NBA and I'm ready for it. But I'm actually getting kind of tucked into him having a good year. And I, you know,
me too.
If he can be like 8-9, 7-9 of what Paul George was, that'd be awesome. I mean, that's good enough. Like I said, they won 40 games last year. 42. They won 42 last year, you know. If he's 7-9 with Paul George, maybe they win 35 games, and maybe that's enough to get them the 8 seed in the East, which, yeah, it's just a destiny to lose to Boston in the first round. But you never know.
Why are you using ninths for your fractions?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why he used ninths. Honestly, I think I'm looking at his stats, and I'm looking at his 109 defensive rating, and I must just use that number. You're right. I should have used, like, 7-10 or 8-10. You're totally right. I just – you know, it's 7 o'clock. I've been up really early, so
we have set the title of this podcast at "Let's hope Oladipo can be 7-9 the player Paul George is." But I think we're both pretty close on what we think he'll be this year. I think his role is pretty obvious. I think McMillan is going to have no trouble plugging him right into that role. You got anything else you want to add about him, or we done here?
Well, I have to say, I think we know our title now for our podcast.
We do. We definitely do. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. As usual, the code you can use on SeatGeek for $20 rebate off your first purchase is LONBA. Thanks for listening. Like we said earlier, we'll have a bunch of episodes coming out this week. And have a great week.